Senate Finance will come to order. Senator Olson, Senator Dyson.
Morning.
Senator Stedman, Commissioner Wilkin, and myself, Senator Green. Three bills on the agenda this morning. Senate Bill 188, House Bill 243, and Senate Bill 207. Do you have any announcements or anything, Senator Wilkin, to rebut?
Yes, ma'am. If I could, tomorrow we're going to do an overview from the Senate Finance perspective of the governor's operating budget. Should take maybe a half an hour to 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd like to ask all members to, if they would join me at 10:30, and I think it'll be the Belts Room for press availability for Senate Finance, to just have a general discussion with the press about how we see the budget to this date. So 10:30 for maybe 20 minutes.
Cool. Yes, I'm sorry, that's this morning?
Pardon me? Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Very good. Senator Olson, are you going to be presenting Senate Bill 188?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
You may be.
If I could, I'd like to have my deputy chief step up to the plate to answer questions in case there are any.
Yes, thank you. We also have people online who wish to testify from AEA.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I introduced Senate Bill 188 after the recommendation by the Governor's Rural Energy Action Council came up with some ideas on how to go ahead and put some polish to the bulk fuel revolving loan fund. A historical perspective, back in 1980, the bulk fuel loan fund was put into effect to aid those communities throughout Alaska that were being hit with larger and larger bills, and especially were being challenged because the shipments of petroleum products were only being brought into the communities once or twice a year. And so they had to go through a long period during the icebound times to provide for their community. And initially, the cap for those loans was $50,000, and because of the increased use of petroleum products as well as the price escalations of the fuel costs were getting up so high, the cap of the, and the maximum amount of the loan was increased accordingly. More recently, the governor put together the Rural Energy Action Council to go ahead and try and make it so that there'd be an incentive for larger cooperative organizations to go ahead and put together their purchasing power to get a lower rate overall. And so to date, this has been working and has been working quite well. And so in order to go ahead and continue on with what has been a very successful program, the cap that this bill, what it does essentially is raises the loan cap from $300,000 to $400,000, with another provision that if an entity is buying fuel for more than one community, the loan limit is increased to the amount $400,000 multiplied by the number of communities, or $1.5 million, which is lesser. This is obviously to encourage larger fuel purchases by those organizations to attain the economy of scale. And with that, I present this bill before you.
Okay, are there any questions for Senator Olson?
I do have two amendments, and I'm not sure when you want me to go ahead and present them, whether you want to discuss the bill first or present them now. That were actually amendments that were given forth by the Action Council to this bill.
It's up to you. It's your choice.
I'll go ahead and present the amendments if I could.
Yes, go ahead. We do need to adopt the CS. Would you move a version S that we adopt that?
Madam Chairman, thank you. I move that we adopt version S of Senate Bill 188.
I'll object just for questions and discussion.
Sure.
Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not familiar with this program, but Senator Olson, is the only change we're making in As a result of the bill, the change in the 300 moves to 400?
As well as the added provision that the those cooperative organizations that are purchasing bulk fuel have a maximum loan limit that is 400,000 multiplied by the number of communities which you're purchasing for.
So so the 400,000 is change one, and change two, and I'm sorry, I don't understand.
It is the allowance for organizations, cooperative organizations that are working together to buy bulk fuel from one purchase to get that to the number of communities multiplied by 400,000 or 1.5 million, whichever is less.
So is the addition of cooperative corporation on line 7 and 8, is that something new? In a cooperative corporation borrow today?
I think that there have been attempts for that to happen, but there aren't any provisions within the bulk fuel program to allow that, but we probably ought to have somebody from the AEA answer that question. It is, as far as I know, it is something new.
And I was just trying to get the changes in the bill. So the one is the dollar change that goes from 300 to 400.
Yes.
The second change has to do with cooperative corporations.
Yes.
Okay, and is there, what other changes are in that paragraph?
That is the, those are the only changes that I have, Senator Wilkin.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
On page 3 of the blue book, there's a pretty good, current law allows individual loans to finance bulk fuel acquisition for use in multiple communities, provided that the governing body of each community issues its written endorsement. And AEA with its written endorsement, under current law, however, the cooperative in this example can borrow no more than $300,000 in a single fiscal year. And so I think it just raises that by the number of participants times $400,000, not to exceed $1.5
million. Thank you.
Because there is kind of a change. I think the pooling up to 1.5 million is probably the most substantial. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Senator Olson if you have any sense of how many people or what, how many communities will aggregate together to take advantage of this cooperative purchasing.
I would have to defer that to the AEA or that authority that is involved with that. I can give you my general sense is that it's a provision that has needs to be looked at, and because there hasn't been authority for that to happen in the past, we don't have a good handle on it. I know the Yukon-Kuskokwim area has tried to put something together, but weren't able to because of the inability under the statute to allow that organization to buy on behalf of those communities.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, and do we have any data on the history of these loans being default?
Yes, we do, Senator Dyson.
Okay, and I'd like to get some idea on that. You know.
Okay, well, first of all, we have data not so much on what loans have been defaulted on. We have good data on the delinquency of some of the loans. But I'd like to have, I think it's Jim McMillan with the AEA answer that specific question since his...
When it's appropriate.
Okay, thank you.
And he could do it now if he'd like.
Okay, Mr. McMillan, did you hear Senator Dyson's question?
Yes, Madam Chair, I did. For the record, this is Jim McMillan, Deputy Director of Credit and Business Development for AIDA AEA.
Go right ahead.
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, over the past few years, the delinquency rate on the bulk revolving loan fund has been averaging between 5 and 10%. Delinquency is defined as any loan where a payment is 90 days or more past due.
And, sir, if I may, what's the multitude of the dollars that have, are in delinquency?
As of, through the chair, Senator Dyson, as of 12/31/05, out of total loan balances of about $4.3 million, there was approximately $297,000 that was delinquent, and at that time it represented, in dollar amount, 6.91% of the outstanding loan balances.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Senator Wilkin, did you have another question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So to follow up on that is, Senator Olson, if a cooperative or a community is behind on their loan, are they able to access the fund for another loan?
We'll probably have to have Mr. McMillan go ahead and answer that question. It's my understanding that those people that are delinquent are not eligible to go ahead and reapply for a loan, and there is another program that they fit under to try and have their outstanding balance taken care of.
Now, Mr. McMillan, can you help us with that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, I can answer that in two ways. Number one, when we get an application for a bulk fuel loan, there are certain credit standards that we apply in determining whether we're going to approve the loan. And one of those credit standards is their credit history. So if they are delinquent on an existing loan, that's an adverse issue. The other thing is the statute and regulations say that they cannot have more than one loan during the fiscal year. So as long as they have an outstanding loan that is unpaid, they are not qualified to receive another one.
Okay. Senator Wilkin.
Mr. McMillan, on page 4 of our blue book, history, status, and projections, it shows the 200,000 that is a result of, it looks like, some write-downs in 2000. The 200,000 that's a result of $422,000 in write-downs in the year 2000. So is that the 200,000 you were speaking of?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, no, it is not. We actually do not write down. When we do write down, it is for book purposes only. That does not relieve the obligation of the borrower to repay, but it's simply an accounting measure. And we do that when we determine that repayment is probably unlikely. So there is a difference between delinquencies, payments being past due, and a write down of the loan balance itself.
Okay, thank you. And last question?
Go right ahead.
Mr. McMillan, in the bill on line 7 and 8, we spoke of a change that adds the words cooperative, corporation, organized under AS 10.15. What is the effect of that in layman's terms? What are we doing there?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, what we're really doing there, and I think as Senator Green had mentioned earlier, it may be a correction to what Senator Olson said. Under the current statutes, a cooperative can borrow. The REACT Commission was looking at the formation of bulk fuel cooperatives so that if a cooperative containing, let's say, 5 communities wanted to borrow in order to try to achieve some type of price break because of the volume, they could do so. But under the current statute, that cooperative, regardless of how many communities are included in that cooperative, could only apply for the loan limit, which is currently $300,000. What this really does is allow the cooperative to take that loan limit times the number of communities and borrow up to that limit or $1.5 million, whichever is less. And the $1.5 million is basically a backstop to prevent the bulk fuel revolving loan fund from being completely depleted.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, if it's okay, I think I'll have them go ahead and explain and testify, then we'll address that.
Sure.
Okay, Jim McMillan, you want to go ahead with your testimony, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will. What I'd like to do with the concurrence of the Chair is just hit some of the highlights that have not been hit so far on the Bulk Fuel Revolving Loan Fund, summarize the proposed changes, and then give the reasons for the changes, and then be available to answer any questions.
That's fine.
I think, as has already been mentioned, what this fund does is provide money for purchase of semi-annual or annual bulk fuel needs in communities less than 2,000 in population. The eligible borrowers are communities, utilities providing power in the community, and fuel retailers in the community. The fund provides money for up to 90% of the wholesale price landed of the bulk fuel purchased, currently not to exceed $300,000. A summary of the proposed changes, including those shown in the amendments. Number one, increases the individual loan limit from $300,000 to $400,000. As I mentioned previously, it allows a cooperative organization organized under AS 1015 or an electric cooperative organized under AS 1025 to borrow the lesser of $400,000 multiplied by the number of communities or $1,500,000. I might also add, there was a previous question about whether any existing cooperatives are utilizing this program. I can think of one off the top of my head, and that's the Middle Kuskokwim Electric Cooperative. I believe it's five communities, and they borrow under the cooperative, but they're currently limited to the individual loan limit. It also expands the definition of eligible borrow to a person maintaining community facilities or infrastructure. And number four, it allows AEA to adopt regulations to establish standards for the allocation of loan funds to eligible borrowers. Now, the reasons for the proposed changes are as follows. Number one, AEA...
Excuse me, Mr. McMillan, are you referring to the amendments?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Number one, AEA has seen over the past couple of years an increase in the number of borrowers and an increase in the loan amount requested. The increases are a result of higher prices for delivered bulk fuel, a decline in vendors wanting to finance the purchase of bulk fuel, and to a certain extent, increased volumes of bulk fuel as a result of AEA's to upgrade bulk fuel tank farms in rural Alaska. The higher bulk fuel prices have caused some communities who previously were able to pay for their purchases to now seek assistance or leverage limited funds they may have. To highlight the increase in the number of borrowers and loan amounts, during fiscal year 03, when the limit was $200,000, there were 39 borrowers for a total commitment of $3.4 million. Six of those 39 borrowers requested the maximum loan of $200,000, and an additional nine borrowers requested a loan amount between $100,000 and $200,000. Now, in fiscal year 04, there were 53 borrowers for a total commitment of $4.9 million. That's an increase of $1.5 million over fiscal year 03. And the loan limit in fiscal year 04 was increased to $300,000, and we saw six borrowers request $200,000 or more, and an additional 17 borrowers request a loan amount between $100,000 and $200,000. And in fiscal year 05, the number of borrowers increased by one to 54 total borrowers, but the total loan commitment increased 37% to $6.7 million. Five of the borrowers requested the maximum loan amount of $300,000, and an additional six borrowers requested $200,000 more. We're a little more than halfway through fiscal year 06, and we've seen 27 borrowers requesting a total of $4.2 million, with two of the loans being the maximum loan amount of $300,000, and an additional six borrowers requesting $200,000 or more. To summarize, from fiscal year 03 through 05, we've seen the average loan amount increase approximately 53%. Also, the REACT wants to encourage formation of fuel cooperatives in hopes that this may help reduce the price of fuel in rural Alaska. And imposing the single loan limit on either a fuel or electric cooperative may defeat their attempt to gain a price break based on volume. Therefore, the proposed changes allows the cooperative to borrow the lesser of the number of communities times the loan limit of $1.5 million. As I mentioned earlier, we capped it at $1.5 million to preclude depleting the fund. Also, AEA was recently requested to lend bulk fuel money to the Rural Utility Services, an arm of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, who had entered into a written agreement with the City of Chivac to manage and operate their sewer and water system, which included purchasing fuel to operate the system. The current statute limits eligible borrowers, as I've already mentioned, to the communities, to the utilities providing power in the community, and to fuel retailers in the community. And we believe that as small communities find that for whatever reason they are unable to manage the affairs of their community, community infrastructure and community facilities in their community, that capable and sustainable third parties may be requested to contractually take over those duties. Finally, the amendment allows AEA, as part of its authority to adopt regulations for this program, to set standards for the allocation of bulk fuel revolving loan fund money to eligible borrowers when the demand on the fund exceeds the amount of money available to lend. Now, this hasn't been a problem since additional capitalization of $5 million was received from USDA RUS in fiscal year 02. However, with the increasing demand on the fund and without additional capitalization, we see where this could become an issue in the future. Madam Chair, I'm available to answer any questions the committee may have.
Just as a reminder, we've had quite a lot of testimony given by Mr. McMillan on the amendments, which really aren't on the table yet, but I let him go ahead and finish it, so when we do get to the amendments, we've got that preview ready. Senator Stedman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. On page 5 of the executive summary, I'm a little bit confused as far as the beginning of the second to last paragraph, but right previous to that, there's a sentence previous to that, talking about one of the potential cooperatives borrowing limit under an amendment of the bill, under an amended bill would be $1 million rather than $15 million. But then it goes on to say, in the next paragraph, only five existing organizations are identified that would be directly affected by the proposed legislation. None of these are currently bulk loan borrowers, and none expect to become borrowers in the foreseeable future, whether or not the legislation is enacted. And I was just wondering if we can get a clarification on that, on those two sentences. And then the following one is sentences, whenever it is possible that one or more may access the bulk loan, regardless of current expectations. I'm not quite sure how this, those comments in the report fit in with the bill.
Mr. McMillan, can you speak to that?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the amendment regarding cooperatives and the amount that they can borrow from the fund is really a proactive measure. REACT is hoping to encourage the formation of bulk fuel cooperatives. There are existing electric cooperatives. One of them referred to in the study is AVAC, a Alaska Village Electric Cooperative. I believe there's probably more than 50 communities that comprise that. Because the size of AVEC, they are able to strike a fairly reasonable deal with fuel vendors and do not need the bulk fuel revolving loan fund to finance that. And in fact, their bulk fuel purchase would bust the fund. So it is talking about some existing cooperatives. That's the one I think primarily that it's referring to. But there, to the best of my knowledge, there aren't probably any that I'm aware of bulk fuel cooperatives. But there is a move to encourage the formation if that will indeed reduce the price of fuel. And that's the purpose for the amendment.
Madam Chair, if I could, I mean, it doesn't really, well, I interpret that answer as there is no current demand, and there may be a demand for this in the future, but this report says there won't be. So I'm kind of, I guess, in a loss. And then I'm not clear, too, on page 4, which is a previous page. Item number 5, they seem to go on and talk about purchasing, and I was wondering if you can kind of elaborate a little bit more on what was written in this report. I'm not sure that it's not insinuating that there may be other avenues in which the price of fuel could be, or more downward pressure on the price of fuel could be achieved through strategies of timely and full payment.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think what the report is referring to is in its review of attempts to establish, quote, bulk fuel cooperatives in the past, they have not been able to achieve what I think is their primary goal, and that is the reduction of the price of fuel through large volume purchases. And there's probably a number of reasons that may have occurred in the past. One is the overhead of the cooperative that is spread across the cooperative members, which is added to the price of fuel. Number two is if the fuel is being delivered to multiple locations, I believe what the vendors have told the author of the study, that's where most of the cost is takes place, is multiple deliveries. And one of the best ways probably to reduce it is to have one point of delivery for the fuel vendor. So I think your interpretation is correct in what's stated in the report, that history dictates that there hasn't been a lot of success with bulk fuel cooperatives.
Any further questions, Senator Stedman? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. McMillan, if you look on page 20 of the report, I was just looking at some of the attempts to go ahead and bring this down. I just want to make sure that the numbers are correct in front of me. As I look at Aniak, a population of 539 or so, and compare that with Tuluksac, a population of 460, is it true that they paid $1.80 per gallon in Aniak while they paid $3.27 a gallon for their bulk fuel purchase?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can only verify what the numbers that are stated in the chart. We had a third party, Dick Emmerman, conduct this study and go out and do the interviews and gather the information. So I don't, in front of me, have any independent rebuttal of that. I can only accept that as it's stated.
One last question, Madam Chairman, on another subject that we talked about earlier, the delinquency or the defaulting of these, possible defaulting of the loans. What, in your experience as a commercial bank lender, what kind of percentage have you looked at of defaults or delinquencies in the commercial world outside of the bulk fuel revolving loan?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, in my experience as a commercial banker for over 25 years in this state, kind of the magical number that bankers look for as to whether you've got excessive delinquencies or not is in the vicinity of 2% of your portfolio. But I might add that these types of loans are higher risk loans, you know, because of the borrowers. And so back 2001 and 2002, shortly after we took over administration of the program, we were seeing delinquencies as high as 25, 30, 35%. We have tried to tighten up those delinquencies by prudent underwriting and strong follow-up on collections, and it's paid off.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Sedman.
I guess the more we get into this, the more confusing it gets. It seems to me like this report infers that this program hasn't been that successful moving the price of fuel down, although it may be a little bit successful in helping some communities finance bulk fuel. It also references that there's more communities that have this program available to it than use it. And I'm not sure that this doesn't get wrapped up in this earlier discussion we've had at the table about these multiple energy assistance programs that the state has throughout the entire state, that some of these may not be needed and or some things should be consolidated or changed. There seems to be some contradictory information, and I'm particularly of interest on the point made earlier on page 5 when it's referenced, page 5 of the summary, when they reference that there may be, regardless of this legislation, there's 5 existing organizations that are identified that would could be directly affected, and they may not use it. So I'm just kind of curious of how this fits in this whole system as we try to get energy assistance through our hinterlands around the state.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Yes, you may.
Through the chair, Senator Sedman, the bulk fuel revolving loan fund was never, to the best of my knowledge, intended to lower the price of fuel. The purpose of the bulk fuel revolving loan fund was to allow communities to finance the large bulk purchases, the large volume of semi-annual and annual deliveries of fuel, something that is difficult. There are a limited number of probably entities out there that will lend. So it was never the intent to reduce the price of fuel, but provide a mechanism for financing where they could pay for the large purchase up front and pay back the loan over a seasonal period. So I wanted to clarify that. In terms of, as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, what we have seen is more communities, especially as the price of fuel goes up, which means larger invoices for delivered fuel. We have seen more communities, in fact, borrow from the fund. With regard to the cooperatives, I am the first to admit that there is a movement out there to try to succeed in the formation of bulk fuel cooperatives. It's my understanding that the Northwest Arctic Borough has been experimenting with a kind of a semi-cooperative model over the past year. I don't know what the results of that is going forward, but with the high price of fuel, more people are looking at more ways to try to reduce the price of fuel, and cooperatives may be only, you know, one measure to get to that goal.
Mm-hmm. Senator Sedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm under the impression under this program, the first time you come to the well, you may get or ask for assistance. I guess it would be a cleaner way of asking the question. Ask for assistance in financing your purchase of bulk fuel, that the interest rate may be zero or near zero. and the second time it's ratcheted up a little bit, maybe around 5% or so, and then the third time you come to the program, you're on a rate tied to long-term municipal revenue bonds, unless there's some other circumstances. And can you elaborate how the interest rate is handled in this, and what the difference between the way that's handled and the way a commercial lending institution may do this over the same time frame, and if there's a large interest rate spread?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the way that you portray the interest rates for the loans is correct. It is presumed that the interest rate by regulation on the first loan is 0%, the second one 5%, and the third one an average of some index of municipal bonds. With regard to commercial lending, I would believe that commercial lenders, number one, price based on their cost of funds, number two, price based on the risk of the loan. So it may vary among different communities, but currently I believe the prime rate is about 7.25%. You're looking at around 5% for treasury bonds. So I would estimate that a commercial lender is going to charge somewhere around maybe 8.5% based on what I've seen. So there is a savings to borrowers who utilize the bulk revolving loan fund.
Thank you. Does that conclude your testimony, Mr. McMillan?
Yes, Madam Chair, it does.
Thank you. Oh, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Miller, how does this bulk fuel program coordinator interface with the NALIC Commission's bulk fuel program? Are they a like program?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, I don't want to say they're a like program. That one is what we call a bridge loan program. There are occasions when applicants will come to us and do not qualify for a variety of reasons. And if they do not, we refer them to the bridge bulk fuel loan fund. And I believe the intent of that is to be a temporary measure until such time that the community can once again qualify for a bulk fuel revolving loan fund. So we do coordinate with them. We keep in contact with them, refer potential clients to them. It really is, my understanding, is a bridge program.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Sarah Fisher-Goad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just here to answer any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Ron Miller.
Madam Chair, I'm also here just to answer questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Senator Olson? Okay, Senator Olson, you have amendments?
Yes, I do, Madam Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Object.
I'm assuming everybody has amendment number one.
Senator Olson, we have to, I'm going to remove my objection to adopting the CS. And so we have that formally before us. Now, you will move amendment number one, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Object.
Amendment number one is a recommendation by the Attorney General to allow a process for adopting allocated limited amounts of money to these eligible borrowers so that there is not a run on the amount that is in the fund, and essentially make sure that it doesn't deplete the reserves, as was alluded to by Mr. McMillan. And so what it does on page one, line two, it inserts the authority for those regulations to establish the standards by which to do that. So with that, I go ahead and urge the amendment and the passage thereof.
Does this imply that there is currently no such standard or no regulation that keeps them from depleting the fund?
I have to have Mr. McMillan answer that question, but it's my understanding it's not so much that it can't deplete it, it just allows, they can deplete it and will become depleted unless these, the ability to go ahead and put these regulations in place and the standards thereof to take effect. Mr. McMillan?
Mr. McMillan.
Madam Chair, as it exists right now, at least prior to the time that we received the $5 million grant from RUS, there were occasions throughout the cycle of the fall or spring barge delivery where we had more applications for dollar amounts than we had cash available in the fund. What we have done in the past, and there is nothing specific in the regulation, but what we have done in the past is basically time the applications and did it on a first-come, first-served basis. The committee needs to also realize that the payback period on the loans is 9 months, so there is a constant cycle of cash running through, and as payments were made and we were sitting on applications but didn't have available cash, as that cash became available, we would go ahead and approve applications. What this does is, even though we haven't had that problem since the $5 million grant, over the past year, at the peak of the season, we had available cash of about $1.5 million. This allows us to adopt standards. It might be first come, first serve. It might be another standard, but it is a suggestion of the Attorney General's office that we provide for the ability to adopt regulations to set standards.
And you can't do that without this language.
Madam Chair, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to speak to that. We do have Brian Bjorquist, who is the assistant AG assigned to ADA here, that may be able to answer that. So I'm really going to defer, Madam Chair.
Brian, do you have anything to say?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I am Brian Bjorquist, Assistant Attorney General. While I have not been primarily working on this bill, it's my understanding that the review through primary our legislative and regulation Assistant Attorney General was to the effect that while this might not be absolutely necessary, that having this type of language authorizing the adoption of regulations is useful and recommended, because it will avoid the risk of litigation over whether regulations, if they are adopted in the future, a challenge to the regulations that would adopt a different method of allocation than a first-come, first-serve type process that has been used in the past.
Well, in that case, then, does this language go far enough? Or should it be more specific?
Madam Chair, we have not actually come up with any standards yet, other than what we have practiced in the past, first come, first serve. If it gets down to the point where we think we need to set some standards, this will allow us to go out in some type of regulatory process to get some feedback, to do some public hearings, and establish regulations that will be not only beneficial for the program, but beneficial for all the eligible borrowers. So I believe that this gives us what we need at this point.
Madam Chair, if I could just add to that, this language is broad enough to give the agency broad discretion to adopt the allocation system that it would believe to be best suited for the program under the circumstances as they will arise in the future. That's the purpose for this type of a language.
Okay. Senator Stedman has a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In 05, it looks like there was loan requests of $9 million and $5.3 million in disbursements. It's about a little under 60% disbursements. Has there been a problem with the people that didn't get the funds, or is there some other reason why there's a big difference in the loan request? And it goes back to the previous 3 years also, 04 and 03.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the figures that you see in that report, there is some confusion because commitments, that is the date where we actually approved a bulk fuel loan. There are times when communities will come to us, oh, 2, maybe even up to 3 months before the barge order is due. And so we will not disperse sometimes for 4 months after the commitment. So it's a timing issue on commitments and dollars lent. And they sometimes cross fiscal years, and it makes it very confusing.
Other questions? Is there further discussion? I'm going to maintain my objection, and then we'll hold the bill. And in the meantime, if we find something that makes it more acceptable, then we can reconsider similar language. Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm not sure who to ask this question of, but if this amendment is not adopted, what detrimental effect will it have on the fund, on the program, essentially?
Ms. McMillan?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I assume you're referring to the amendment under consideration right now, the standards for allocation?
That's correct. That's correct.
At this time, based on our recent experience over the past year or two, I do not see the non-adoption of this being a problem. As I mentioned earlier, at the peak, we still had available cash of about $1.5 million. If the loan limit is increased, that could potentially put further pressure on that available cash, especially if the price of fuel keeps going up. So it does get very speculative, and it's hard to look in a crystal ball and indicate at what point this may become an issue.
Okay, thank you. Will you call the roll, please?
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
No.
Senator Bundy? Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Wilkin?
No.
Senator Green?
No.
Renee?
The amendment fails.
Madam.
Senator Stedman?
Madam Chair, if I could, before we go on, when we bring this bill back, maybe I can get more information on the loan request or the loan disbursement table in the report, because if there's an issue with fiscal years and the table is so distorted it's inaccurate, maybe we can get it undistorted.
Okay. Do you have a particular reference?
Yeah, page number 1 in the executive summary, bottom of the page.
Okay.
I would expect that the distortions are minimal with the fiscal year ending in June. Okay. But maybe there are.
And then in the meantime, you may also want to contact AEA and have a longer conversation with them.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move amendment number 2.
Object.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Amendment number 2 has to do with the availability of these loans to larger organizations that are out there. Right now, the bulk fuel revolving loan is only limited to communities, utility operators, and fuel retailers. And so with that, what this portion of the bill does is actually allows rural utility services, including water and sewer, to be maintained by the monies that come from the bulk fuel loan program. An example has been that the REA, which is a subsidiary of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, has not been able to go ahead and engage or be able to go ahead and help those communities with these loans that are out there. And so with that, the amendment was recommended by the Action Council, and so I present it to you this morning.
I maintain my objection. Is there any discussion on the amendment? I just think the language is very broad and has implications that to maintain community facilities or maintaining a community facility, I'm not sure there's enough limitation on that language. Is there any further discussion? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I share your concern. I remember back some years ago that we added community facilities to PCE. And so we just got the PCE report last week, so I looked at that. And since 99, the community facilities line, other than there's a personal line and a community facilities line, and that community facilities line is growing at 5 times the rate of the residential line. So I just think that the community facility portion may overtake the residential portion. What we're trying to do is buy fuel in bulk at a lower rate to help residents. But this may squeeze out the residential benefit to the benefit of community facilities. So I guess the worst that happens is if community facilities can't, then they borrow at the 8% instead of the 7%, which doesn't seem to be that big of a thing. So I share your concern, Madam Chair.
Madam Chairman, I think that the perspective that you're coming from, where one is starting to outdistance the other, is not so much that it's getting ahead of everything, it's more that it's starting to catch up with the need that was there, and so it started out as a deficit and is now catching up with the community's needs. I guess I'd like to ask Mr. McMillan to go ahead and expand on some of the issues that I brought out or on this amendment to make sure that I have everything there or I have it presented in a correct manner.
Mr. McMillan?
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I think it's important for the committee to understand that this amendment pertains more to the third party who is coming in and by written agreement is taking over, for lack of a better term, taking over the affairs of the community. As it stands right now, communities, the city of, is eligible to borrow from the bulk fuel revolving loan fund. That bulk fuel can be used for a number of reasons. And one of the purposes it can be used for is heating the community facilities that the city currently owns. So this is not a change expanding how the fuel can be used. It is a change that expands who can borrow. Because under the current statute, if a third party, even under a written agreement with the city, is maintaining that, and part of their obligation or duties under that contract is to purchase fuel to, you know, receipt revenues or to bill in the case of something that is a billable, you know, purpose, it allows them, with the consent of the community, to go ahead and be the borrower under the statute. So I don't see it as expanding how the fuel is used. I see it as expanding who can borrow.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes, and I think the example that can be used, and I think that this gives more responsibility to an additional authority such as the Yukon Customer Health Corporation, who does have good financial management, to assist a community that is small, that is having financial difficulty. And I don't know if individuals have followed the news, but out in the Yukon Kuskokwim Delta, one of Senator Olson's communities was Chivac, and I think that this is where the corporation can go ahead and accept the bulk fuel loan and be more responsible to make sure that it will pay back the loan in where Chivac has had a very bad track record. So I think the program with this amendment will be more solvent with the adoption of this amendment.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your comment, Madam Chair. It's been several years since I've spent much time in Western Alaska inland, but I remember being at least two villages, maybe more, that really had three government buildings. There was the town that was organized under state law. There was, I think it was an IRA, Indian Reorganization Act government, and then there was another one that was maybe traditional chief's council or something, you know, I remember the folks I was dealing with just having this idea of contempt for the building and the people that were working in the building having to do with the community that was organized under state law and so on and so forth. And I was bothered about three levels of government going on there, and I would be more comfortable with this amendment if, when it said a government entity that were not doing things to really encourage three overlapping governments there. And then I won't name any names, but I know of two villages that used to be one village and on the Yukon, and it's really there because there was one group of families got mad at another one and moved a little bit down the river, and so now we've got two villages with powerhouses and a laundromat and I don't know if there's two schools or not, but I don't want us to be adding incentives for that inefficiency, I don't mean to, but my guess is, you know, what this amendment might have a little trouble at this table, and it could get my support a little more if I was more comfortable that we were adding incentives to efficiency here rather than adding incentives for, I've already said it. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Steadman had his hand up. Yes. Senator Steadman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the earlier comments by Senator Hoffman, the intent here to have a more well-managed, financially anyway, entity involved in this program to help the default ratio stay low, because I think that better serves all the participants in the bulk fuel program along with the state in general. I think that's a good idea, but I'm not really comfortable with the language, and I think as this bill goes back and gets worked on some more, that maybe we can work on, or they could try to deal with that issue to ensure that we can minimize our loan and collection losses within this program.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. McMillan.
Yes, if I may speak to
some
of the comments that were made. This amendment is really a tool to assist communities in maintaining their infrastructure. I think, as all of us realize, there has been an awful lot of money in capital infrastructure that has been put into these communities. And it may be unfortunate, but we actually see some communities that, for lack of a better term, are almost dysfunctional. And so what this does is allow for parties other than those parties which are already in the community and are not functioning to come in and maintain that infrastructure, so that all of that capital money that we put in there, you know, is preserved. It's not really, to us, it's not a case of overlapping government, but this comes about when there is a lack of government, period.
Thank you. I'm going to maintain my objection, but As we discuss this further, I may have some suggestions for how to get this where we need to be. Roll, please.
Actually, Madam Chairman, if I could comment on...
Right ahead.
First of all, I'd like to go ahead and respond to some of the question that Senator Dyson had in the contempt that he voices is certainly one that's understandable. But if you look at what the governmental agencies or governmental levels are trying to do, one, namely the city, the corporation, the IRA, have different functions that are out there. And so I think in the recent past, there has been a consolidation of those institutions so that it does run more efficiently. But if I could go on to the next subject, which is the amendment. I think what I'd like to do at this point is, rather than bring it up for a vote and press on, I'd like to withdraw the amendment and work with the action committee to try and make something that's a little more palatable to the Senate Finance Committee. So I'm withdrawing the amendment, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Dyson?
Yeah, I don't know whether Senator Olson misspoke or not, but I did not express any contempt for the multiple levels of organization. I just reflected what some of the folks who had spoke to me from the community had contempt for another one. And I appreciate your testimony that there has been some move to consolidation. And what I'm not interested at all in is having three separate buildings that are, you know, and so on. And I'm delighted to hear that there's more cooperation. But I have no contempt.
Madam Chairman, I apologize if I brought that across and certainly wasn't trying to do that.
Thank you very much, Senator Olson. We'll set this aside and continue our work on that. House Bill 243. Doug, are you here to? No, you're not doing that. House Bill 243. Okay, we have some people online to testify. I don't know if maybe the one person carrying it is on there. These are all for answering questions. Three of these. Mr. Carlson, are you presenting the bill today?
Madam Chair, this is Dave Carlson with Port Ann Pool. I'm just here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. We'll move HB 243 aside and go to Senate Bill 207.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May we have a brief at ease?
Yes, we may. Brief at ease, please. We're hearing CS for Senate Bill number 207.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Doug Letch, aide to Senator Gary Stevens, who is unable to be with you this morning. I'm here to talk about Senate Bill 207, the committee substitute. This is a legislation that will increase the membership of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Aerospace Development Corporation, or AADC, from 9 to 11 members, and to ensure that three of the members come from Kodiak Island, where launch activities occur. The current nine-member board includes three state residents who have significant high level of experience in the private business sector, specializing in finance, economic development, or marketing. The board also includes seats for the president or designee of the University of Alaska, the director or designee of the University of Alaska Geophysical Institute, the commissioner of commerce, community and economic development, or the designee, two members who have held or currently hold a position in the aerospace industry or a special experience regarding federal regulatory procedures and policies involving space or operational experience, and a public school educator or public member. As you can see from that list, none of these seats are currently designated for Kodiak Island Borough residents, and it's part of the reason why we're introducing this legislation. As you may know, since the late 1990s, AADC has been conducting numerous rocket launch construction projects and other activities at its Kodiak Island complex on Kodiak Launch Complex, on Kodiak Island. These activities do have a tremendous impact on the local residents' recreational activities at nearby Passaic Beach, the business of the local governments, and also the Kodiak Island economy. And with the Kodiak Launch Complex playing a key role in the testing of the nation's missile defense system, Senator Stevens believes it's important for the island community to be well represented on the AADC Board of Directors. This bill is supported by the City of Kodiak and Kodiak Island Borough by resolution, which I believe has been included in your packets.
Thank you. Have there in the past been members of the Board of Directors from Kodiak?
Yeah, Madam Chair, in the past we've seen usually two people from Kodiak on the Board of Directors. At current, I believe there's only one member from on the board that's from Kodiak Island. That would be Dave Woodruff, who is a successful businessman, operates a fish cannery there in Kodiak, and is also a member of the Kodiak City Council. We did have two people from Kodiak as recently as last year, and that other individual, also a very successful businessman, dropped out due to some other reasons, and was replaced by somebody not from Kodiak Island.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm just kind of curious. I like the concept of having local representation on these boards. I think it's good. In the event that there's seats available, but there's no applicants that meet the definition of high level, whatever that is, of experience, I was wondering if we could get some feedback on what the outcome would be if there's only one or two members in the community that meet this definition that come forward, and the other applicants would be no qualifiers or non-qualifiers, but you know they need to fill this seat. Is there a potential of having non-qualified people filling these seats?
Do you have a response, Doug?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think one of the categories that was mentioned while I was talking, you know, my introduction, one of the categories that springs to mind when I consider that question is the member of the public or public school educator could be a seat that's designated for Kodiak Island. That's one way, I think, to resolve the issue of do we have enough qualified people in Kodiak. I think people in Kodiak would probably tell you that we have plenty of qualified people there and that would never be an issue. But I think that if you look at perhaps putting a public school teacher in there, particularly where the launch facility is about a hour bus ride out to Passaic from the school, it might tie in very well with the local education system.
Okay, well, on that point, are you referring to the public educator under item 6?
Through the chair, I have to get my bill. Pardon me one second. Through the chair, or Madam Chairman, that's correct. The public school educator or public member, that could easily be a Kodiak Island borough person.
Okay, well, as I read this, and I may be incorrect, back on page 1, line 8, 5 state residents, to me, the 3 public members are referring to the language in lines 8 through 10, and not the public educator. Have you considered having the entire laundry list of people and then having three of these members shall be from the borough where the launch activities of the corporation occur?
Madam Chairman, I think that's a great suggestion.
Okay.
I think that's something we could look at.
Okay. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. This launch site serves Department of Defense on some occasions. Does this board have the authority to make decisions about what the clients of the site can do and who can be qualified as a client to use the facility?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I believe that question would be best put to a representative of the department. Sally Sadler from the department's here. She might be able to answer the question. It's my understanding the board serves in a variety of capacities as a standard board with advisory capacities and also decision-making capacities. And specific to that question, perhaps Sally could answer that. I hate to drag you from your chair.
That's okay, Madam Chair. For the record, Sally Sadler, Legislative Liaison, Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and I apologize. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, I'm concerned that I want to know what authority this board has to make management decisions about who the clients are that can use the facility and for what purposes. Obviously, I'm worried that because they serve the Department of Defense, that indeed a board who might want to preclude the Department of Defense from using this site for very strategic national defense issues.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Senator Dyson, through the chair, I think that's something I'm going to have to get back to you on. And I don't know if Mr. Pat Ladner, who's the CEO of the corporation's online. No, he's not.
Mark Hamilton is on the line. He might be able to answer that question. Yeah, Mark Hamilton, are you able to answer Senator Dyson's question?
Yes, ma'am. And through the chair, Senator Dyson, the board has the responsibility of discovering the qualifications of a launch partner, and they are very specifically technical, and there's, as you might expect, a very, very extensive contract drawn up with each customer. No one has dibs on the range. No one is a certain customer until considered by the board.
Does that answer your question, Senator Dyson? Or would you like more information?
Well, it raises questions. So the board could decide that the Department of Defense could not use the facility for national defense purposes?
Obviously, that would be an extraordinary case through the chair. I'm sorry, Senator Dyson. That would be an extraordinary circumstance, but it is part of a contractual arrangement now that they, Department of Defense, gives us a very specific timeline. If they had a project which required a specific reaction, there would be contractual obligations on their part, essentially run a warm range, and that would have to be disclosed to any commercial customers. Were those commercial customers to suddenly appear in the numbers that frankly were envisioned 12 years ago, where you had the potential of an Iridium corporation launching and refreshing as many as 600 satellites, it I believe would be a very difficult corporate decision, but ultimately excluding dire national need, I think that it would probably be the recommendation of the board that we seek the commercial opportunity rather than just holding a range open for whenever Department of Defense got around deciding they wanted to use it.
Yeah, okay, if I may continue,
go ahead.
Mark. So I assume that this board, and I haven't gotten a look at, taken the time to look at what their specific responsibility and mission is, but their mission is to make sure that the environmental concerns for the region and particularly the fallout from the fuels from the and so on and the impact on the offshore waters and onshore area and the safety of the local residents and the financial stability of the corporation. But I'm worried that a philosophical anti-war, anti-national bent of the board could restrict U.S. defense efforts. Can you help me at all?
I would think if we were imprudent enough to staff the board with people who have that kind of a bias, that would be that would certainly be a risk. I don't believe that that is the case of the existing board or any board membership that I have been associated with to date. Concerns about impacts on Kodiak are absolutely paramount with the board. I mean, that's where the facility is. There are concerns about virtually every single thing that's done out there. It's not difficult at all to discover what the position is of Kodiak, since we have traditionally had membership on it. We've also had non-voting membership from elected officials. Representative Gabriel Ledoux is a non-voting member of the board. Of course, all the meetings are public, and many of these issues are issues that the board takes a great deal of time in listening to and discovering.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of things, if I could. Three things, actually. And I'm glad President Hamilton brought out the legislative participation. I have the pleasure of sitting on this board for the last couple of years representing the Senate. And so I have some working knowledge of how it manages that launch site. And there has been in the past always someone from Kodiak, correct me, Doug, if I'm wrong, that has been a legislator. Senator Stevens was on the board. Currently, Gabriel Ledoux represents in a non-voting capacity, as I do, the legislative branch. So there's one voice at the table from Kodiak. So I'd like to make sure the committee knows that. Doug, I'm puzzled knowing how the board works. I guess I'm puzzled. Has there been a sense that the voice of Kodiak has been squelched, and therefore we need to increase the membership? What drives this?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkin, I think you hit the nail on the head. In the past, there have been legislative members in the ex officio capacity. Representative Ledoux at the moment, Senator Stevens back when he was in the House, Senator Osterman before that. But there's always been two voting members of the Kodiak Island on this board of directors, and that whether that was by design or happenstances, it's hard to say. It's just been that way from the very beginning, and this facility, for lack of a better word, is a lightning rod in the community of Kodiak. There are people that are watching every move that AADC makes. There are people that are always going to be adamantly opposed to everything that AADC does in Kodiak Island, and there's people that have embraced this emerging business as an opportunity for Kodiak to revitalize its economy, to take a step in a new direction and a new frontier, if you will. And what's happened over the years is anytime AADC has made some major moves or even some minor moves, it does affect what happens in our community. And I think people in Kodiak, if you look at the resolutions from the City Council and the Borough Assembly, the folks in Kodiak feel that their interests are best represented by having two voting members. And that's currently not in statute that they have to be from Kodiak, and they're looking for a little assurance that when push comes to shove, Kodiak's voices will be heard.
Okay, thank you. And I guess my concern is that this is sort of like the Alaska Housing Finance Bill that we've got in front of us, too, and now we have a board coming to us. They'd like to raise their pay, and so would all the other boards. This legislation contemplates that we're going to now geographically designate board members. That bothers me, and because we don't do it anywhere else. And in this particular case, suddenly we're going to have over a quarter of the board represented from one particular area. And I align myself with Senator Dyson, and that is that perhaps today is okay, but in the future that may lessen the use of that rocket range for whatever reason. So I'm concerned about the precedent that we're setting here. There's between a school teacher or educator, legislative participation, one or two people, depending on qualifications, not on geography, there could be four people at the table speaking on behalf of Kodiak. So, I mean, I think that Kodiak is well represented. In my limited experience with the board, I haven't gotten the sense that the people of Kodiak have been ignored at all. In fact, I would, to the contrary, suggest that they've been heard and reheard. And while some of the things that rocket range may not align itself with some of the folks in Kodiak, the vast majority would agree that rocket range is a benefit to Kodiak and Alaska. So I'm just not supportive of this, Madam Chair. I think we're starting down a path that we now do boards by geography rather than qualifications. And if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And I think we're trying to fix something here that's not broke at all. So thank you.
Senator Dyson.
Senator Wilkin said it more eloquently than me, but I had the privilege of running a federal research vessel that was doing, when they were doing the AIS for this project 10 years ago or so. And this project, just where Kodiak is and Narrow Cape, you look south from there, it's just very strategically located. And it is a major launch site and a very safe one for Homo sapiens, at least, and very strategic, I believe, to our national interests. And I worry, as Senator Wilkin has said eloquently, that not be available to our national interests. Thank you, Senator Wilkin, for saying it better than me.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess one of the questions I have for you, is there been a problem in the past where an issue has been controversial and narrowly defeated by the lack of votes on the side of the local people?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I don't know of any specific instance.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Mark Hamilton, would you like to give your formal testimony? If you would,
yes, ma'am.
If you would give your name and title, please.
Yes, indeed. I'm Mark Hamilton. I'm the president of the University of Alaska. I'm also the chairman of the board of the Alaska Aerospace Corporation. The membership of the board as designated in the legislation, I think, was exactly the right approach. I do think that this stage of the game, where Alaska Aerospace is looking very hard at the expansion of their commercial opportunities, and not all in Kodiak, and I'd rather not discuss all of them that are in the wind, I really think this would be a very bad movement. As a matter of fact, I don't believe there has been an issue. Anyone who certainly who knows Dave Woodruff, and anyone who knows Representative Do, prior to that, Representative Dan Ogg, These are certainly not individuals who are shrinking violets in any sense, and I think we're really quite aware. We've actually had a recent incident that, speaks against such a designation, and that is one of the individuals we had served in Kodiak was forced to resign because his store was being boycotted. So you get politics involved with commercial activities, and that probably explains as much as anything the failure of kind of governmental corporations. Frankly, I have brought to the board, we have discussed on some occasion, really a very, very different direction that says I think the board needs to take a very good hard look and see, do we want the president or the designee of the president of the University of Alaska? Do we want the director or designee of the Geophysical Institute of the university? I know exactly why they were on there 12 years ago. But as the board changes, I think we need less designation rather than more, even understanding. I've served as the chairman of this board now for, I believe, 5 years, and certainly have enjoyed the opportunity to do that. But in the same sense, you need to have the same kind of consistent line. It's very difficult at this stage of the game for me to tell you why the president or the designee of the president should be on that particular board. This ought to be a commercial board, and it ought to be moving in an area where we have the best people on there who can move a corporation forward. And I'm not sure how the president or the Geophysical Institute folks could do that. Clearly, the Commissioner of Commerce should be on there in that kind of a board. And clearly, people who understand aerospace and commercial space should be on that board. Other than that, I think we're really moving the wrong direction in terms of designation. And that would complete my testimony, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Any discussion? Senator Hoffman.
Yes. Where does the board meet and how often do they meet?
Through the chair, the board meets quarterly, and they meet primarily in Anchorage, allowing, again, the easiest commercial transport. We will have a board meeting on Kodiak in June, and I have been out to Kodiak to speak to the borough assembly out there, as has Pat Ladner. But it's primarily in Anchorage, and it's overwhelmingly to allow people, all of whom obviously have day jobs, to gather in the way that the transportation systems of Alaska most directly support.
Other questions? Okay, Doug, we'll set this aside, and there may be some more work to do, and we'll get back with you. We've received notice that Dave Carlson and Ron Miller are still online and would like to discuss House Bill 243. So we will bring House Bill 243 back before us. Dave Carlson or Ron Miller?
Madam Chair, this is Ron Miller, Executive Director of Alaska Industrial Development Export Authority and Alaska Energy Authority. I believe the committee has Mr. Carlson's testimony from last week on the record, and I can make a few comments and then answer questions if the committee wishes.
Go ahead.
The House finance version before the committee of HB 243 extends the date the Fort Am Pool Power Agency needs to provide ADA, an approved finance plan. That bill, HB 243, passed the House in May of last year. During the interim, the Fort Am Pool Agency and the Alaska Energy Authority reached an agreement with regard to credit provision of the sale of the Fort Am Pool Power Project. When that project was sold, AEA and the Fort Am Pool Power Agency entered into a memorandum of understanding and a sales agreement. The purchase price was $73 million, However, a $5 million credit was provided based on certain contingencies. One of those contingencies was that the Ford Ampoule Agency had to present to ADA by April 11, 2005, a finance plan demonstrating committed funds sufficient to complete the Swan Tai E power project as a transmission line intertie. The plan that was provided to ADA in 2005 was based on requesting and receipt of federal and government and state grants. That did not show committed funds necessary to complete the project, and so ADA notified Ford Ampoule Power Agency that that $5 million credit was due. That credit has to be paid to the Power Cost Equalization Endowment. We entered into discussions with the Ford Ampoule Agency and came to an agreement that $5 million would be placed into an interest-bearing escrow account to give the Ford Ampoule Agency time to come up with the funds to complete the Swan Tai E project. And if they do not complete that project, that money will, plus the interest will be released to the PCE endowment. If this legislation, the proposed draft legislation isn't approved by June 30 of this year, that money will be released to the endowment. And I believe the committee has before them a work draft version of this legislation that calls for legislative approval of the amendment to the purchase and sales agreement that we entered into in August of last year.
Are there questions for Ron Miller? Take a breath, please. Mr. Wilkin, would you move version X for purposes of our discussion today?
Madam Chair, I would move that Senate, the committee consider Senate Committee Substitute, House Bill 243 Finance Version X dated 2-2 as our working document.
Okay. We'll work, be working. There are no objection. We'll be working from version X. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a couple brief comments on the issue of the completion of the Tai Swan Lake intertie connection, which is the issue at hand here with the $5 million credit. The Ford Ampoule is in the process of updating their load study analysis to help with the completion of that portion of the intertie. That is in the works. That should be done hopefully sometime in March. So I think there's a more than a reasonable chance that we'll get that project finished eventually.
Thank you. Any other questions? By the way, we do need to welcome Senator Bundy. He's been here quite some time, and I forgot to announce it. Is there anyone else online who would like to testify? Brian Bjorkquist.
Madam Chair, for the record, I am Brian Bjorkquist. I'm here to answer any questions.
Is that the same for you, Sarah?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. Dave Carlson, did you have anything further to add?
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd just like to add the Ford Ampoule is supportive of this proposed legislation, and we worked hard with ADA and AEA. The Swan Tai Intertie is a vital piece of major infrastructure in southern southeast Alaska, and this this bill will keep that project moving forward.
Thank you very much. I noticed there's also someone from an off-net, John Bowling.
Madam Chair, I'm from Craig, City of Craig. I just want to say that Madam Chair, that I sit on the Southeast Conference Energy Committee. The committee supports a number of intertie projects around Southeast Alaska. The Swan Lake, Tai Lake intertie project is one of the one of the projects that the Southeast Conference strongly supports, and we support efforts by the Fort Dam Pool and AEA to pass this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. John, would you please introduce yourself and again repeat who you represent?
My name is John Bowling. I work for the City of Craig, but I'm speaking today as the chair of the Southeast Conference Energy Committee.
Thank you.
Southeast Conference Energy Committee.
Very good. Any further questions? Okay, we'll hold this for later this week. Get it on its way. Are there any other items to bring before the committee? You've made your announcement, Senator Wilkin.
Yeah, thank you.
There's no further business, Senate Finance is adjourned.